Hello, and welcome to Convincible, the podcast and reading club where we go to war, much like the Viltrumites, over one simple question. Is Invincible a good comic? I'm Dave Busing, founder and editor-in-chief of comicbookherald.com and staunch defender of Robert Kirkman and Ryan Otley's Invincible. I have it inside my top 100 on Comic Book Herald's best comics of all time. I'm joined today by two attackers at the gates. Two individuals who have been needling me, who have been poking and prodding me for months now, trying to declare that Invincible is not, in fact, one of the greatest comics of all time. And finally, I think this is going to be the episode where I am given an apology. Zach Dean, I'll throw it to you. How would you like to apologize?
I'd rather than issuing an apology, I'd rather issue a lament. To quote Morpheus from the end of Matrix Reloaded, I have dreamed a dream, but now that dream is gone from me. Because this comic was okay. It was pretty good. You know what? I'm certainly not going to say it's in a top 100 state yet. I mean, obviously, we'll get into it. But, like, I will say this is the first batch that we read five episodes into this thing where I was like, when Dave was like, you know, it grows into something, where I was like, okay, you know what? I'm kind of seeing it. Like if it had been this all along, maybe. Maybe I'd be, you know, a little higher on it. I jokingly wrote to both of you yesterday. It was like, hey, this Invincible comic's pretty good. You just got to give it like 70 issues to get going. Like, let it cook. It's the classic let it cook comic.
Yeah, it is.
But we'll talk details. But, you know, I think it's okay. It's still good. We got some stuff here that I'm going to roll my eyes at. But, like, it's cooking.
Charlotte, apology accepted. Thank you,
yeah,
Charlotte.
Yeah, I'm glad you took it that way.
Charlotte, what did you think of this round of Invincible?
I'm not attacking at the gates, first of all.
I've really lumped you in with Zach just because I'm feeling on my heels and clearly have been waning in my own support. So I'm blaming you very unfairly.
I get that.
Let me
yell at her during Annihilation.
I did not actually yell at Charlotte.
No, you didn't.
Let's be clear.
I think that's what we're all saying now. So.
That's what you keep saying.
That's what everyone in the streets is saying.
If there's one thing people in comics are talking about, it's our Annihilation episode. That's for sure. Number one on everybody's lips. Charlotte, what did you actually think? I would love to hear.
We're getting to the point in Invincible where I have like truly no idea where it goes next. And like fully stuff I've never heard about, wasn't expecting, like we're 10 years from this being adapted into the animation, right? Like this, didn't know about anything that's happened in these episodes or in these issues. And I'm sold. Not sold in like Invincible is the GOAT, but you know, as far as superhero comics go, that's pretty high. Yeah, I was pretty impressed by what happens in this and how, like, I think we were all feeling kind of down on the last batch and kind of starting to get tired. And this, yeah, brought me back to being pretty excited about where Invincible and Convincible go next. Yeah.
So we talked about, for this episode, we read Invincible number 71 to number 90. Those are the volumes 14 through 16, if you're reading in the trades. The Viltrumite War through a one called Family Ties. I do think it's funny how these are often... Pretty much every trade is just like a sitcom, like an old-timey sitcom name, and then the Viltrumite War is number 14. It's like, no, that's too big to give a sitcom name. I have one apology, actually, to give. And it's not to either of you, it's to the listeners. And it's that I knew going into this that reading this just straight through was a bad idea. Like, I knew that. But I did it anyway. For lack of courage, for lack of like early on, like after like the second episode, I should have been like, you know what? Let's jump ahead to when I think this gets good, because we pulled a classic superhero comics mistake, right? Like we did the exact opposite of what the whole point of the My Marvelous Year Club, right? like the whole idea of the My Marvelous Year Club is like, yeah, we're just gonna jump in when stuff is worth reading or of value. And I don't think Invincible is like garbage, you know, throughout prior to this point. I think there's moments. But it's, we did the opposite of a curated approach, you know? And I do think it's a series that it builds on itself. It's definitely an argument for letting superhero comics cook. You know, to your point, Zach, I think this is something that you kind of look where Invincible gets to as it builds and as it grows and as the audience grows with it. And it's a really strong argument for like, for letting superhero comics grow in this era. I mean, Kirkman is calling out specifically the renumbering of the number ones in his, you know, little mini comic book shop satire stuff. But it is like, it's like, yeah, when you do that all the time, nothing really builds on itself. And you don't really allow for these kind of moments. I think that's a huge miss in the industry right now, especially in the big two, right? And the superhero side of things. Like, I actually think they've lost a lot by doing that. I don't think I'm alone there. I think there are better ways to manage it. But, you know, the broader point being, we should have jumped around in Invincible. I actually don't. If it's like your first go and you're having a great time, fantastic. Good. I won't take that away from you. If it's not, though,
it's crazy
to be like, no, you have to read 70 issues, right? Like, I would never accept that advice from anyone on any comic, you know? If they were like, oh, One Piece gets great at volume 8, I would just, like, read volume 1, skim, and go to volume 8.
Like, is that the, like, widely shared opinion about Invincible that it gets great here?
I don't know that it is, actually. That's an interesting question. What's your all perception on that?
No, I don't think so. I think people just like Invincible. Yeah, I also, you know, I mean, just to, you know, re-establish the grounds for our argument here.
Grounds for divorce, yeah.
Yeah. A comic that you're like, well, you know, we definitely should have, like, skipped all the kind of the boring stuff. It does not deserve to be in your top 25 when it is a single creative team written, you know.
Yeah. Like, no. But what I'm saying, though, is we should have, in order to convince you of the majesty,
yeah, but that's,
I was
still
seeing,
being like, yeah, just read the, don't, you know, don't read the stuff that's not essential. Well, you shouldn't have in a set, you know, like,
no, but we should have cut harder to the really good stuff and left the generally just like good to great stuff.
I think that would have been
behind.
But that's
honest.
Saying Kirkman should have cut the not great stuff,
exactly,
and gone straight to the great stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like, if, yeah, I see what Zach means of, like, if we're trying to judge if Invincible is truly, which is, that's not what we're trying to do with MMY, right? If we're trying to judge Invincible as a whole, the comic, if it deserves to be called one of the greatest comics of all time, yeah, we have to go through the whole thing, even if we don't like going,
you know what, you know what, you're both right. Apology rescinded. I should never have started. I like to apologize for trying to apologize to the listeners.
Apologize for the apology.
That was wrong. That was wrong.
Listeners, I want to apologize for Dave's apology. It was ill-conceived. The other thing you mentioned is,
yeah,
the resetting of number ones, and it's an argument for, like, letting superhero comics go. I also don't really buy that, although I do generally agree with what you're saying, that, like, you know, you do have to give some runs, like, a little time to breathe and give, like, creators time to, you know, find their footing. But I think at least this is an example of that. I would say this is more Kirkman and Otley both, like, growing as artists rather than them figuring out Invincible. Because this is, like, 6 issues. I mean, maybe it's, you know, it's a little bit of both. But, like, I just think both of them, especially Otley, man, it can't be overstated how much Otley has changed.
Well, it's like we're into the 2010s now. You know, I mean, we started this thing, you know, what was it, 2003, 2004? You know, we're talking early aughts, and it's like,
yeah, there's like,
you know,
six
it's a whole new era of, like, Image Comics kicking off.
We're reading, like, year 6 through 8 here at this point.
Which I do think makes a big difference. Like, I think the competition level, too, you know, it's like you start to get into this, like, saga exists.
And
now all of a sudden you got East to West and Sex Criminals and Wiccan Divine, and it's like, I don't think that's, Kirkman and Otley are very aware of where comics are going and kind of the competition around them, as opposed to, like, that early aughts feel of, like, what are the good Image books? I guess we can launch an Astounding Wolfman. Like, they don't really know what they are, you know? Yeah, no, it's an interesting point. They definitely do. I mean, it is that thing, too, of, like, if creators get so many reps under their belt together, too, you know, like, they have figured out a shorthand and a pacing. And, like, I think the thing that is probably the most impressive to me about issues 71 through 90 is it's almost 20 issues and it just accelerates. Like, it is the pacing.
Yeah.
And it's that Bendis Ultimate Spider-Man experience of just like, even if I'm not in love with this, I am propelled through it by creators who know how to carry you through the story. And I do think that was a huge part of what I liked about this series initially too, was just like I got to issue 90 and we finished and I was like, I need to read issue 91. The story's not done. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, and
it keeps escalating. Yeah.
And we haven't had that as much with Invincible, I think.
Yeah, I think these issues are way better at finding a core to focus on, right? Which is, for the most part, the Viltrumite War and the presence of the Viltrumites in space and now on Earth.
Yeah.
That is the core of what the main tension is. Like, that's the universe problem. And then there is the, like, character problem of Mark trying to do things differently as a superhero. And I think those two things being the core of Invincible are super cool. And then everything that happens gets tied to that and participates to building and building and building. I'm thinking of when Mark sees the guy, like the electric guy who killed his wife and child, like seeking revenge after him. Like, that was very much a one-off story that felt like, okay, we're doing this now and then we're going to do something else. Now when it happens again and he comes back and there's a confrontation, the way it's resolved then builds onto like what Mark is doing personally and trying to change as Spiro and doing things better. Like, everything, every like small one issue story is part of a bigger narrative and like helps building and building and building. And I think that's like super effective and exactly what you're describing. I'm like, yeah, I want to read the next issue because it's not done yet. But it is still satisfying issue per issue. Like, you're getting small satisfactions of small endings, like end of a mini narrative elements, I guess. So yeah, it's not frustrating on that level, but it just, yeah, I want to read the next issue.
It's like kind of stands in contrast to, I think, what I was complaining about a lot, especially early on, which is that, like, he's like, well, I've got 8 little stories brewing in the back, but none of them are really intriguing, and none of them are being, like, teased properly. They're just kind of happening all in the background, and there's not, like, a good core momentum pulling you through. There's basically one instance of that in this thing, and it's a robot / Rex and Monster Girl. Something's happening in the background with that, where I'm like, Kirkman, like, I do not care.
Oh, that's
what
funny.
Rex is crying about. Because you've given me no indication what he's just like,
yeah,
man, it's a something mystery. In my past was really upsetting. And like, he literally just is like, that thing that Monster Girl and I did. Like, he just keeps saying it really obliquely, but it continually gets teased. And I'm like, man, this is really bad, like, cliffhanger. Like, you have to give me something intriguing here. It can't just be like, there's something here.
Yeah. But well, I mean, we have 44 issues to go, right? So,
yeah.
You know, that's kind of the nature of the beast.
Besides what Charlotte is saying, I think is so spot on. Like, that Viltrumite War is basically, here's like the one thing happening, and it really focuses hard on that, and like the stakes of it become apparent, right? It's like, what's happening right now, the danger that's apparent right now, and then when it ends, it sets up like the new stakes for the future status quo. I mean, so that we can break it down, talk about it a little more in detail. That Viltrumite War stuff, I think, is really solid in the violence that Otley does. Some of the first time where I'm like, this violence is like really justified.
The Mark Conquest fight?
Yeah. I mean, the Conquest fight before worked in that regard too, I think, because like that violence really escalates the feeling of danger to the characters that we actually care about.
Yeah.
And now there's more of them that are like in this specific battle. You know, Oliver feels like so vulnerable here. And then when he gets really injured, you feel like it was coming. And, you know, and then the injuries that Mark takes. Although, all right, get a little side thing here. Mark fights Conquest. He kind of strangles him to death while Conquest is, like, ripping Mark's guts out. It's really horrifying. He leaves Conquest dead, but Mark is, like, basically left for dead, laying on the surface of this planet when Nolan and Oliver find him.
Well, he's holding his guts. Like, if you put like a hand on your guts, like, they stay in.
Yeah, but they're all like sprawled out on the dirt near around him.
Yeah.
And And then, like, in the next issue, they've basically, you just see, like, he's got this tight bandage packed around his torso, and his dad's like, we just gotta let him heal for a few months. And I'm like, God, his stomach is so full of grit right now. Like, those got picked up so much dirt and pebbles, and they just kind of were like, smush it all back in. I just couldn't help, kept thinking about getting a bunch of dirt sewed into you.
He's got several staph infections, I think is where you're going with this, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, I'm concerned about that as well. Yeah, no, but that violent, because we've talked about the violence of it, and it's a thing that Invincible is often celebrated for, you know? I think the fact that it's, like, actually exaggerated violence and there's blood everywhere, obviously that is not new to this series, but I do think it's been a thing that has felt immature at times and sort of like a cheap play at adulthood, but that is really more of a, you know, a teenager's dream of maturity. And
does it match the tone, you know? I think that's maybe
it's been flawed. And I think here it is actually, and part of this is just Ollie's skill level, I think. It's genuinely gross, and it is, like you said, like there's an emotional weight to it, because it's like, I think one thing that actually has happened very successfully, and we talked about this early, is like early on, I think both of you were like, I don't care about Mark. Mark is the core hero of this book, and I do not care. By the end of these issues, I'm actually like pretty interested in Mark Grayson and in Invincible. I think they've finally kind of figured some things out, you know? And like, I like him working with Dinosaurus. I mean, we'll get to it, but it's like, that to me is like one of the most interesting things he's done, and it took 80 issues, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But it's like he feels like a superhero with like thoughts and emotions and things that I'm actually starting to care about. Yeah,
that's what I'm like. He made a choice. Yeah. He like thought about it. You see him considering it, and then he's making like a bold choice, and it doesn't feel like flailing, kind of.
Or out of the blue. It feels kind of like, okay, we built to this. Like, I get why he'd be in that place.
They built it with this arc, like what Charlotte was saying, with, you know, you kind of see Mark progressing there. He fights the guy, the electricity guy, who killed his family.
Yeah.
He fights Dinosaurus in Las Vegas, which, you know what? Las Vegas sucks. We're going there in a, like, next month for a wrestling pay-per-view, but like...
So you were into that. You were like, turn it to glass. Yeah.
I've been there before. It's a terrible place. Really bad city. So yeah, Dinosaurus was right. And then he has that little running thing with the guy who keeps like making inventions to pay for his engagement ring for his girlfriend, which is good and like kind of funny and fits in with the tone. That is the kind of like ultimate Spider-Man, like Spidey keeps running into an unconventional villain and he like learns to help him despite how frustrating the guy is. Like, that was really good. I really liked that a little bit. But the other big thing that it does, I think, it gets away from, I mean, one of the other issues I've had is that, like, it's just kind of a really competently regurgitated version of other superhero comics. And I feel like we're getting into, like, it really is becoming its own thing that, like, it's making big choices about its own world that are not, like, oh, yeah, well, you know, I've seen that story play out a million times. Maybe it hasn't been mixed quite this way. But so, like, after the Viltrumite War, which was engaging, the new status quo of the Viltrumites showing up on Earth and the Viltrumites being like, we're at a stalemate, we can destroy Earth anytime, maybe it'll destroy us in the process, but we you know, mutually assured destruction. What we propose is that we live here and like interbreed with humans, and like having the Viltrumites there, it's great. It's a great idea.
That's a really, really strong idea.
It's really engaging. Like, it really is, like, I keep saying really. It makes me...
Because you're so blown away by how much you love this comic. It's great.
It's one of the first times where I was like, I want to see what Invincible does, like, moving forward with this. Like, I want to see how this gets resolved, which I cannot have... I can say that I've been like, yeah, I'll read more. I'm happy to read more. But I've never been like, I want to know where this goes. Like,
Charlotte.
Yeah, really.
Having Thrag... Thrag is the name of the...
Having the Freddie Mercury one, he's great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he's great. The look is great. But also him having that restraint of being like, I know we are screwed if I don't find some way of surviving and making a deal. and like him continuing to be a presence, not in the way of like with Conquest or even Omni-Man early on. It's like every time we're gonna see these guys, it's gonna be a fight, right? There's no two ways around it. This two ways around it about it.
No, you're right. Either's fine. No two ways around it.
Yeah. Thank you. I love that Thrag is like, no, we have to deal with this guy just being with us, I guess. That's really like it's.
You know what I just realized, Charlotte?
Yeah.
In what you're saying is, the two primary antagonists are finally pretty cerebral. We have Thrag and Dinosaurus.
Yeah.
And they're both thinking villains.
Yeah.
And that's Doctor Doom. That's Thanos.
Thrag
reminds me very much of Thanos in like the Infinity events of Jim Sterling, where he's like, yeah, I guess I have to, like, not the first one, but the follow-up ones of like,
the pragmatism.
Yeah, I guess I just have to be with the heroes because that's the only way I'm going to reach my goals.
Yeah, right.
And like the heroes being like, I guess we have to have this guy with us because we don't have a choice. Like that's great. I love what the menace that he represents by just like being around. That's great. I really like Thrag. I also like that just design wise, he's the Viltrumite that looks the most like Mark, which I think is not accidental.
Mm. And there's some mystery about what their connection is. Right.
Which, you know what, that is a decent mystery. Mostly because he does it through action. Thrag finds out something about Mark's DNA test, and it's so, like, it's so serious to him that he's willing to destroy the, like, the truce that they just made. Like, he goes to kill Mark, he just kills the scientist who finds out immediately because it can't get out, whatever it is. So, like, you get a sense of, you know, a heightened sense that this is a big secret. Versus...
Yeah.
Robot, like, what the hell's going on there? I couldn't believe how many times he hints at Robot's sadness. It was like literally the fifth scene where Robot was like, I can't think about what we did there.
I mean, Zach, I'm hemming and hawing here, but like, what do you think? What do you think is happening there?
Did he accidentally wiped out the world he said he saved, or he had sex with Monster Girl before she grew up? Like,
oh,
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, you're joking, but it feels like there's a weird,
Well, Monster Girl's back, and now she's like thing. A hot adult.
I think the Monster Girl, there's like essays upon essays to be written about what is happening there, right? I mean, that's
not have this character.
Does anyone feel good about what's happening there?
Does anyone like really care about Monster Girl enough that they couldn't just?
Oh, I like her as a character. I think. I think it's this comic does not do well by any sort of like mature approach to sexuality. We've been talking about that throughout it. With the exception of, we've really buried the lead on this. I mean, Zach, there's a clear reason we're all singing this comic's praises, and it's because Kirkman finally admitted he likes thick girls, right? I mean, I don't know why we waited this long.
I can't wrap my head around what is going on there. It's bad.
Well, it's too big.
But it's...
pretends to be good by having duplicate being worse.
Yeah.
I don't know what he's doing with Eve. Like, Eve, he comes back. Mark comes back after, like, 10 months at the Viltrumite War. Eve is now... She's put on, like... Well, okay, here's the thing. She's put on either 15 or... 85 pounds, depending on the panel that Otley draws her, because sometimes she's drawn like Big Bertha from the West Coast Avengers, and sometimes it looks like
she just
has like a slightly bigger bust. Like, you can't decide. Otley is not doing a good job with this.
Well, she does, she does thin out throughout. Like, that's the thing that part of the story. Like, she is starting to go back to looking what she looked like earlier, I think. She's losing weight throughout, but yeah, there's like, it's not a joke exactly, but there's a weird tragedy thing around it. That's like, she can just be fat now. That's okay. That's fine.
My biggest problem is I really think Otley doesn't know how to draw like a larger body without it being like slightly undignified. Like, she doesn't look good in her suit, and I think it's, you know, like... just, man, were you thinking of Love and Rockets this whole time? Because, like,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, like Maggie in that gains weight halfway through and still gets drawn like just a normal person. And it's not just like, oh, yeah, her belly's sticking out of all of her clothes. And, you know, like, I just don't think Ollie's doing a great job with her. But I also, I just kind of don't. Like, I praised Love and Rockets up and down for having a character just gain weight for no particular reason, that it's just a thing that happens in people's lives. And I kind of wish I could extend this the same, you know, like, credit for that, but I just, like, it just feels too cheap, like, somehow, you know, like, a lot of salad jokes.
It also feels like, yeah, that's a big part of it. Also, it feels very much tied with the fact that she had an abortion while Mark was gone, and, like, just the whole thing of, her life was terrible while Mark wasn't here, so I guess she gained weight, because that's what sad people do.
Fine.
Well, she pregnant for a time, which, you know, certainly contributes to your body shifting. I think it is played initially as kind of a joke. And I also just think it's a certain horniness. Like, for big butts.
Yeah, there's a little fetish.
I don't think Otley handles it actually well at all. I really like Ryan Otley in this book. Don't think that's a body type and progression that he gets throughout these issues. It's inconsistent, and again too, it's not like Eve is like really overweight. Like, she's just much heavier than she was as the 18-year-old, but she's like still like a pretty normal woman. Right? Like, it's not that exaggerated.
Use the word normal.
I don't know. Yes. What is the appropriate word?
You could just say that. Yeah. I mean, typically sized is loaded too, but sorry. I don't mean to make you sound like you're...
Word choice is a problem right now. But the point is, it's not actually that, like, it's not that different.
She put on as much weight as I did when I hit 30, which is like 35 pounds, you know? Like,
well, so I said it's normal. Like, that
put on like adult weight. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that's wrong.
Think it's just kind of a tone. There's a tone to it that doesn't... Okay, here's my question, though. The bigger thing in this is, you know, it's hinted at a while. Like, we knew Eve was pregnant.
Yeah.
Where's the kid? We don't know what's going on. Dave already said it. Like, she has an abortion while he's gone. How is this generally talked about, Dave? Because I kind of had the expectation that I was going to, like, really cringe at this. I was like, oh, God, this is going to be bad. Like, he's not going to handle this well. And then I kind of think it's good. Fine, at least, but kind of... good.
Go on. Why do you think it's good?
So Eve reveals that while she's gone, she's like, I didn't know if you were alive or dead, and I didn't know if and when you were coming back, and like, I couldn't do this on my own, so I made the choice to have an abortion. And she's just really sad about it, and Mark is like, I'm really sorry that you had to do that, and they cry together, and that's like the conclusion of it. And I'm like, that kind of seems correct. Like, yeah, having an abortion is like a tough choice, and it's a sad choice, even if you're, you know, I mean, you can, you know, it seems presented correctly, right? Like, you can be very pro-choice, and you can have decided for an abortion for yourself, and it could still be a very, like, sad thing to go through.
A hard thing to do.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah. And, you know, especially in the circumstance of, like, making that decision for you and your couple, and like, or you and your partner, without them knowing
about.
And then, like, her being scared about his response, it all felt very like, yeah, that seems correct.
You know, it also does kind of explain
well observed,
or I think contribute to kind of her character throughout this, like, because she's like, you know, Mark shows up and she's like bawling, you know, over like having gained the weight, which, you know, like, maybe, right? But it's also she's going through a lot, and I do think it's kind of like, it kind of makes sense, you know. Zach, I actually, well, before I say, Charlotte, what did you think? How did you think this was handled?
Yeah, for the most part, like, the abortion part, yeah, I feel like it is okay. I don't know if they're going to go back to it. Not that they have to, but I think the way it's handled just in these issues is
fine. Can you
imagine?
Sorry, I just had a flash of like, yeah, they're going to go back to it, and they're going to do some kind of like, Engstrom Levy somehow got, you know,
I mean,
the baby, and now it's... Oh my God, I just had that thought that like, they would do a...
Yeah, I mean, I can't lie, terrible. That's been in the back of my mind as well, because I'm like... Oof. Yeah, we didn't, like, it's like, if you don't see the body, the person isn't dead. And I feel like, if you don't see the emotion, the baby's alive.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, superhero comics have absolutely broken all of our brains.
I feel like it's based on, like, too many Fantastic Four comics that I think this. And, like,
but I feel like, Clone Saga, you know, Invincible has... And, you know, despite everything, I do think Invincible has been good about, like, not having those shackles of big two superhero comics, of, like, making smarter choices and not always going for the cliche.
I think this is very much Oh, go ahead.
No, just wanted to say, yeah, I think the bullshit part is fine. The weight gain part, I'm a bit more iffy on. And I think you guys are right that the art is a big part of it. I feel like just the writing is mostly fine. I think the art doesn't help. But I still think it's not, like, egregious. I think it's...
Yeah, you said iffy, and I'm like, that's how I feel. Like, yeah. I'm not, like, totally, like, this is terrible, but I feel iffy about it.
I do like, for Mark and Eve as a couple, actually, kind of everything about this. Like, where it nets, like Mark's non-judgment of Eve... is useful for him as a character that I care about. It helps me have faith and kind of interest in their relationship, both in weight and the abortion, honestly. Like, Mark is incredibly supportive of her, and that makes me feel good about the two of them being together.
I feel like the issue 25 version of this is goes for the cheaper, like, oh, Mark is going to have, like, a weird conservative rant about abortion or something.
Yeah. I think you're right.
You know what The issue with that, and this is being a little ungenerous, is that it does make it, I had this thought, like, it's slightly more about Mark and his reaction than it is about Eve. Like, her gaining weight and her having an abortion. Like, what you said, his reaction is good, and, you know, you kind of like his reaction, but, like, it still is more about him than about, like, Eve.
Yeah, I don't, I can't argue that. I mean, it's definitely Mark's lens on a lot of this stuff. I don't think it's as lopsided as I would have worried. I'll admit, when Eve admits to Mark she had an abortion, I'd completely forgotten that this happened in the book. And I was definitely not, I was cringing a bit. I think in the back of my brain, there's kind of that thing with Invincible where it's always like, you feel Kirkman pushing against the big two, right? And we've talked about this, and there are pros to this that we've described. But a lot of times, too, I feel like some of the choices he makes are just to be like, they'd never do this in the big two. And sometimes I think that gives sort of that false sense, that fake sense of maturity that bothers me, you know, where you're reaching for, quote unquote, adult themes and adult topics and jamming them into this book about a kid with his intestines hanging out fighting an alien. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I think I said this in the last episode of the Comics Couples Counseling. I think when Kirkman tries to address real issues, it goes pretty badly. This is not the worst example, I don't think. I don't know what the broader consensus on this is. There's a worse example coming.
I kind of felt okay.
You know, so I'm kind of like
Lisa was like, maybe Lisa last month like set me up to be worried about this, but maybe it wasn't this she was setting.
No, up. There's definitely a much worse thing. I don't like when Invincible tries to handle these things because it is not the space for it, and I don't think Kirkman has the temperament or the like emotional complexity baked into this book to deal with this stuff appropriately. That said, I don't think this is a particularly egregious example. We've seen worse, you know, in Marvel. You know, I can think of Peter and MJ's baby in the 90s. Mm-hmm. I can think of, I really dislike the miscarriage issue, John Byrne, Fantastic Four. This doesn't have that sort of like, it doesn't leave the grossness in my mouth, I don't think. But I also don't, I'm not like,
well, these
I'm not like, oh, like so brave cleaner. That they did this. I'm not like, oh, wow, amazing.
Yeah.
Can't believe that's in this comic.
It's not, you know? Love and Rockets. You know, that's the point.
Well, it's, I mean, if that's your comparison point for Invincible. Like,
it is funny because it is like anytime this stuff comes up, I was just like, well, you want a really great fat character? Love and Rockets. You want, you know, abortion talked about in a really,
she's not fat,
way?
Is what I was trying to say earlier. Can we agree on that?
I don't know. I mean, it depends.
Because I can't believe you just said that word. If we, you know, I'm just going to really harp on the words you're saying.
Okay, well, sorry, I didn't say horrendously.
Yeah, but you thought it. You thought it. We could all hear it.
I mean, I think it depends on how
you're listening to. You're listening to the new Beyonce and going.
Oh yeah,
it's not Radiohead. It's not Radiohead though. Like that's the Love and Rockets comparison. It's like.
No, that's not even in the same. Beyonce's...
It's absolutely fair. It's not. It's not.
No,
even...
no, I'm saying because Beyonce's bet, like, comparing Invincible and Beyonce, that's rude.
I disagree.
To like,
I mean, I kind of agree, but like, Beyonce is a pop star. Invincible is a pop star. It's like a pop star of comics. Like,
she's. That's. I don't know. I don't buy this one. It would be like listening to, with something, you know, a little bit more.
Taylor Swift's probably even, a more yeah, fair even Invincible Taylor Swift. Comp.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But you just don't, you know, you understand we're going to get flamed like we've never been flamed before.
How many Swifties do you think listen to My Marvelous Year in Convincible?
They're everywhere.
No, they're I know. Everywhere. I know several. Listening. But I, they have us staffed right now. I think Invincible is kind of a Taylor Swift of comics. I do. You know, it's pop star stuff, and it can try to get artistic at times, but like it's not going for that critically acclaimed
indie
artistic vibe and comparing it to Love and Rockets is ridiculous.
No, of course it is. I know. I'm just, you know, like those are comics that came to mind when I was reading it. But
you know what Love and Rockets doesn't have? I'm going to say it.
What?
Anything is as fun as Dinosaurus.
They have...
Show me Dinosaurus and Love and Rockets and I will go ahead and move that up a spot on the best comics of all time. But until then...
If Brad and Lisa are listening... our guest from last month, I do need to issue a retraction of the way I think Lisa and I tussled on Dinosaurus a little bit, that she was like...
Tussled on a lot of things. We should get you one of your wrestling pods that you're always talking about. To you.
she said something like, you know, Dinosaurus is when, like, Invincible talks about, like, real stuff. And I was like, no, it's a joke here, right? It's a dinosaur who's like, you know, return to your natural state. And I was like, it's portrayed as a joke. I kind of stand by those issues, but now that in the wider context of the character, he clearly like has a lot more going on. And so maybe she kind of, you know, wasn't honed in on the exact issues we were talking about and kind of thought was thinking of the character in broad. And so she's totally right. Like, Dinosaurus is not just a joke character. Although the indifference
thing is great.
The indifference thing is pretty good. Like,
that's a good gag. A
pretty funny little gag. Yeah. Of like,
I can think of more funny things in these issues. Like, there's a bunch of stuff that got me cackling. The indifference thing and, like, Mark telling the story of how he got his powers to him.
That was pretty good.
Oh, boy.
That's some good self-awareness.
And the three panels of Cecil arriving in the room Omni-Man is in and being like, oh, shit, it's Omni-Man, and firing on him, and just, like, three identical panels of, like, firing him, big explosion on him, man, and like just he doesn't move in three panels. Hi, Cecil. That's great. That's good. And very
like,
good.
Sorry, just
visual
it was just
gag.
A reflex. Like,
that's
yeah,
great.
That's
good.
That's
great.
It's a good gag. I think the what was I gonna say?
You're gonna say how much you love Dinosaurus and how he's the greatest character created in comics.
He's pretty cool. He's becoming, you know, kind of his thing with Thrag, his little showdown with Thrag at the end. I was like, kind of like, how am I rooting for this guy?
The most emotional I've been reading Invincible, bar none. Bar none.
Wait, it's like Dinosaurus getting all his teeth broken?
Oh my gosh, that's brutal.
It's kind of brutal.
It is very brutal.
It's real, and he's fighting for Mark. And I tell you what, I used to tell people I only cry when old wizards die or at funerals. And honestly, I think we have to add, or when Ben and Johnny have to say goodbye to each other. And I think... I'm gonna add.
When dinosaurs lose their teeth.
when dinosaurs does something heroic and almost dies because of it. I'm being hyperbolic, but I actually think this is the most I've cared about a character in this whole book.
Interesting.
I was really emotional about his Thrag battle.
I didn't get there, but I thought it just like it worked as a moment.
It's
with all
good
these
characters. Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad something finally touched your. Your cold, dead heart. And it was a dinosaur.
The dinosaur thinks like a man. I love Dinosaurus. He's so cool. He is like a walking squadron supreme. Like the whole Mark Gruenwald squadron supreme is like, what if the superheroes actually tried to fix the world, right? Mm-hmm. And that's Dinosaurus. He's like thinking long-term, about climate change and the impact of Las Vegas. And he's like, we have to blow up the city. And Mark's like, listen, you're kind of right, but your methods are insane. And then the two of them coming together to be like, hey, let's take your ideas, but let's implement them in less insane ways. It's awesome. It's so great. And like, there's like, whatever, some bad alien shows up. And Mark's like, why didn't you call me, Dinosaurus? And he's like, well, those, in the grand scheme, those irrigation channels you were digging, we're going to do more good. That's so smart. It's really clever superhero stuff.
The comparison I was making in our last episode, which I think is a much more fair comparison because it does enter the same waters, is the Brennan Lee Mulligan, Molly Knox Ostertag, strong female protagonist comic. Kind of dances around the same stuff. And I was
you love subtly plugging extra issues. If there's a book that you covered on extra issues, you bring it up 75 times an episode.
Well, I mean, it is because, like, those are comics that we just spend a lot of time. Like, I write thorough notes. I think about those comics a lot for those episodes.
Yeah. Well, I just think it's funny because I never repeat myself and I, like, never use the same reference twice. But, like,
definitely.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a good point. But I should also kind of retract that, like, I think this batch is where this comic has first started to, like, meet that comic, like, in some of the same ground. It's not quite there the same way, but, like, it's probably as close or much closer that it, for a comic that's also interested in like big punch fights, which strong female protagonist isn't, it's much more about just the discussion around this stuff. I think Invincible is taking like a pretty big step towards that like kind of thoughtful approach and doing it through action, which is something strong female protagonist does, but not quite as much. So Dave, I have a question for you. Did you ever watch Dinosaurs in the 90s?
It always creeped me out. I mean, I was young. And I don't know if, like, the kind of that claymation animations. I know it's not clay, but, puppets. Like, just that puppets. Okay. I always found it a little off-putting. I don't know if as an adult I'd be like, oh, this was actually really funny or something. But, like, as a kid, I was, like, a little weirded out by it. But, yeah, I've seen it.
So now you just get a little emotional around Dinosaurs. I'm just wondering.
Oh, is that why? Have you seen the final episode of Dinosaurs?
No, is it? Okay. Oh, is it the asteroid?
You should go and, yeah, you should YouTube the final scene because it is one of the most chilling moments in Disney Channel entertainment you will ever see.
Oh, I'm just reading about it now.
I'm trying to figure this out from context. I thought, I thought Dinosaurs was, I was guessing like I don't know, Discovery Channel like documentary show. Was it Disney? Like,
no, it's just like an ABC sitcom that's like, you know, what if...
Wait, a sitcom?
Yeah, it's a sitcom that's like, what if... what's the John Goodman... like, Roseanne.
I was just thinking Roseanne, which I don't know why random, I think that. I've never seen it.
What the hell?
Like a working class family sitcom, but they were all dinosaurs, right? That's the...
Oh, I'm looking at it. So it's kind of a Muppets thing.
It's like people in...
Is it Jim Henson or is it not?
Okay, it is Jim Henson. I'm the baby.
And so in the last episode, they all die?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, the asteroid comes.
Holy hell.
And they're like just having like a dinner conversation while it's happening. You should watch it. It's wild.
Charlie, you should watch all 65 episodes.
You have to. I'll do that to really appreciate it.
I didn't know Jessica Walters did the voice of the mother in it though. That's crazy. From Arrested Development.
Yeah, I would not have guessed that.
Anyway. Anyway, you can't watch that show because it's just too. Too emotionally fraught.
Yeah, no chance. My kids have watched a ton of dinosaur documentaries.
I thought you were gonna say your kids have glommed onto a '90s sitcom about dinosaurs.
Old stuff is creepy. I don't think we realize like how creepy our childhoods are until you have kids and they're like, I do not like the vibes of any of this.
Cow and Chicken. You watch that one? That's a show that I'm like, that one was really doing something weird.
I don't know what that is. No.
Yeah, all right. Well, Cow and Chicken. Charlotte, Google that one.
You're really deflecting here from how I just don't want hard dinosaurs hit me right in the guts. And
Charlotte, Google Cow and Chicken and then just click on images. And,
no, like, don't do that, Charlotte. Share your thoughts on... Chicken? No, Charlotte, don't listen to him. He's trying to distract you from sharing with us your thoughts on dinosaurs because I want to hear.
Yeah, he's great.
Thank you. That's all I need.
I think you were very right that the two, and I don't know how much like he truly is an antagonist, but like I like that the two main like threats are him and Thrag as like thinking villains that have like an ethical stance that like is understandable. and can make sense. I think that's super interesting. And I think, the way he just, like, convinces the Viltrumites to help with Mark's recovery by just being like, yeah, no, it makes sense for me to help. Like, that's, yeah, I that's, like, it just feels different from any other character interactions that we've seen. Like, a lot of the human superheroes tend to blend together, if not, like, not in design necessarily, and not even really in voice, but just like in the way they're gonna react to stuff and the role they're gonna play, they're all very similar.
Yeah.
And I think Dinosaurus is very different from any other superhero supervillain from the Invincible verse. Contrary to, listen, when we started Invincible, I was wondering if we'd do the full Invincible verse of like Wolfman and Tech Jacket and Guardians of the Globe. I can't believe
every time
I'm glad we didn't. Yeah. What the hell's going on with Tech Jacket and why is he a character? He's a big nothing of a man.
Kirkman pushing his own
spin-offs.
He's grown
a beard.
Yeah, Kirkman pushing his own spin-offs and stuff. Like, I don't fault him for it, but
none of
especially in retrospect, it's like, man, like, it to me, that's where it's like, if you're not fully in superhero brain mode, it is, like, super annoying, right? Like, if you're fully in superhero brain mode, you can go hop to those other superhero comics, you know, that aren't doing any... They don't do anything better than Invincible. That's for sure. I would say they're lesser versions of it. And, you know, I think if it's, like... If this is, like, you know, your first superhero universe kind of thing, you know? Like, maybe that's a fun ride or whatever. But yeah, it's like, man, he pushes Tech Jacket hard, and it's just like, I absolutely, there's zero, like, you could not pay me to go read Tech Jacket. It might be totally fine, but there's no way it's more than fine. I guess is my thing on that. What I do really like, and we've kind of been beating around it, but I do, you know, I'm curious what your take on this is going to be, Charlotte, because Zach, you said that, you know, this is the first time where you were like, it feels like it's doing things different, right? Or it feels like it actually has ideas that maybe are branching out as opposed to just kind of pastiche of superhero stuff that's been done before. I do love how it seems like the story is one thing and then Kirkman and Otley will push it and kind of flip it on its head and just make it a different take on the scent. Like the way they flip the Viltrumite War into Thrags on Earth, and then you think, oh, it's going to be another throwdown on Earth, and then it's just a conversation, and then Thrag is just there, and now he's a player. It's really smart. And it's the same thing with Dinosaurus, where it's like, oh, they're going to throw down with another villain, just a goofy one-off. And it's like, oh, no, now he's actually convincing Mark of things, and he's thinking about what he's saying, and they're partnering together. I think that stuff is kind of happening throughout, you know? Obviously, the dad twist at the beginning of all of it, you know? Yeah. Like, there are twists, and there are flips and inversions, but there aren't as many that surprise me. And I can't quite figure out if it's just a function of I haven't read these twice and I didn't remember, or are these twists or inversions actually better? What do you think, Charlotte? Is it actually getting better at that, or has it always kind of been there?
I think it's getting better. I think it's getting better, and it's also getting better at just keeping the ball rolling, because I think the three, like, we read the equivalent of three trades, and it just keeps going throughout. Yeah. It's not, like, reliant on one big twist and then back to normal, which I think the past few dozen of issues have kind of been that. Like the Mars symbiote stuff has been boring as all heck. I think this is like, oh yeah, basically every storyline I'm interested in, and also there are some big twists, not even twists, but like big developments that are really intriguing. And like I was expecting the Oliver stuff to be just like kind of boring, just like, oh, here's my evil kind of clone and that's it, which is a very cliche Marvel DC do that all the time. Oliver is way more interesting than I gave him credit for, and I think his point of view of humanity is interesting just because it's not just the, oh, he's evil by nature, which always bores the hell out of me.
Yeah.
It's like, no, yeah, he grew up in a society and a species that works way differently, and makes sense that life isn't as precious to them. So yeah, he views like he's half from different culture that views things very differently, and that makes him way more pragmatic, but not necessarily fully evil. That's more interesting. And him like firing the virus onto Mark as well. Like yeah, I'm curious to see where the character goes next. I don't know what place he has in what's happening with the vulture mites on Earth and Mark and Dinosaurus's plans.
We talked about that virus thing is also a big we haven't talked about that yet.
Yeah.
I like that as a little like moral conundrum that everyone's, you know, talking about Nolan on one side of it versus Alan. I think it's pretty good. It's like interesting to see Nolan really kind of like put his money where his mouth is for like protecting Earth in that case. Yeah. And like really making a choice there. This isn't a huge complaint, but like I really like all the buildup of Alan like getting the virus, and he's fighting with Nolan, and Oliver fights him and then decides he's on his side, and
and just to clarify for anyone listening, he's deciding if he should wipe out all of the Viltrumites, right? But yeah, it will also kill all everyone on Earth. Is that right?
Probably maybe kill all humans, you know, as they're thinking. But it would be a worthy sacrifice because it would just end the Viltrumite Empire. And while they're arguing about it in space, Thrag comes up and he's like, what are you, stupid? Like, that wouldn't work. Like, maybe you'd infect some of me, but like, the rest of us will just leave. Also, we might not all be on Earth. Did you actually think, like, maybe I'm lying and you don't actually know? Like, there's nine like holes in your plan here. So like, why would you even consider doing this? Like, and yeah. Alan basically just gets talked down by Thrag, and he's just like, ah, damn, he's right.
Yeah.
This was a bad plan. Like, I really didn't think this one through, and it really made me dislike Alan as, like, a leader here. It made him seem very dumb that, like, I mean, it's a little bit of a Kirkman issue where he's writing characters that make his other characters look stupid, but, like, Thrag so thoroughly owned him with facts and logic that, like, Alan just looked like
like, I think on a quick glance, it seems like Alan has the, like, very pragmatic point of view of, like, we have to do this for the good of the many. And then Mark and Nolan have the, like, kind of naive point of view of, like, well, maybe being on Earth will make the Viltrumites better.
Sure.
But also, I think, yeah, like you're saying, that's more messy because Alan's plan is far from perfect and full of holes. But also the naive standpoint isn't that, like, improbable. It feels like possible, but not on the... Not because, like, Invincible is a naive comic, necessarily, even if it can be. But, like, because, yeah, I guess maybe we don't know. Like, it did happen for Nolan, and he wasn't different than the others.
Which I liked all that. Like, I like Alan being like, I can't risk that you're not just a fluke, Nolan. Like,
yeah.
He's like, it's not going to happen for everyone. Like, you're a fluke, which is fine. Like, I think that kind of an argument. I just like Thrag being like, it's not going to work, even if, like, you know, you're willing to sacrifice Earth. Like, you know, maybe I'll get sick and the rest of us will just leave and then we'll still be out there.
I do think in a lot of ways that's Kirkman kind of at his best as, like, a fan. You know, we talked about, like, the Silver Age, like, Marvel influence and stuff, you know, just the old school superhero comics influence. Kirkman feels like the kind of reader who probably, as he's gotten older, looks at those and is just screaming, oh, just talk to each other. Sure. Just because, like, if there's one consistent inversion throughout Invincible, it's that where you think a throwdown is going to happen, it ends with people just talking to each other, and that actually resolves it. And it is very funny how this book, it sweeps you in the drama, and it sweeps you in the pacing and the ethical dilemma of the superhero brain, right? And then Thrag pops in to undercut all of that and be like, this is not a binary. Are you insane? Right? Like, it's not an either or. It won't work either way. And it's actually a very, I don't know if it's, yeah, I mean, Kirkman intentionally setting it up just to knock it down kind of thing. But it's like, I read that way where I'm just like allowing the story to let me believe that it is a binary, you know, but then kind of undercutting that is like, oh yeah, like, like, this is a terrible plan.
you know? I think he throws Alan under the bus a little bit. Also,
Alan,
like,
has never been the smartest character. Yeah. Like, he doesn't feel out of character.
Yeah, which is fine if that's like what he's intending to do. I usually buck against, like, the you know, like a comic carrying you along in its own plot universe and then later reminding you of some plot hole, but pretending it was like the characters being stupid. I hate, like the example we just had that in Marvel series, I think it's in the Whedon run where the wild sentinels that destroyed Genosha, like they go back to Genosha and the wild sentinels are there and they're like, did you forget that the wild sentinel? And it was like, no, but like Morrison just stopped talking about it, so I obviously just moved on from it and I just assumed it was concluded. So it's not like a indictment of our characters, like it's just how the comic book goes. It felt a little like that, but it's not so bad. I overall liked the back and forth between all the like the players here and how it played out, and Oliver just impulsively going for it, and like when he gets marked with the virus, it feels, you know, it's a real like impactful moment. So yeah, this Invincible comic, it's pretty okay.
There's a lot going on here. You know, the one thing, Zach, that I thought you were going to bring up by now that you haven't yet that did bother me was it's really annoying how quickly Nolan and Debbie get back together.
Oh, yeah.
Super annoying. Well, you know what?
I think I buy it just because I feel like he's
so good in bed.
He's so, yeah, well, they really lead into that. Wait, actually, remind me of that when we're done talking about this.
I feel
like Kirkman has hand-waved a little bit of the Nolan rehab. Like, I know he's put some time.
Oh, I don't know about that.
But, like, I think overall, like, I think it's just kind of, like, it's hard to square this entirely with, like, yeah, but, like, he killed a lot of people on Earth. Like, he did a lot of murders there, right? Like, I think maybe that's the point. It's not just that he's, like, was a secret agent and lied to everyone. It's not like he actually destroyed a lot of people. He smushed a lot of heads. When he was there, so for like him to just be rehabilitated feels a little like everyone's just like,
well, and there's also a reading of Invincible where it's like he's a really abusive father and a murderer, you know what I mean? Like if you wanted to just pull the curtain back,
yeah, I don't think it's engaged
and call it for what it is. I'm saying there's a reading of it.
I just am like, yeah, it's cool that you're forgiving him, Debbie, but like what about Wonder Woman's girlfriend? Like she, you know, he punched through Wonder Woman and you know all
that's those. A trademarked protection we can't say.
Yeah, I don't remember who.
Invincible
Power Warrior Princess? Woman? Oh, is that the Squad and Supreme version?
I don't remember the version, but whatever. The Justice League, like he killed all those guys just for, you know,
yeah.
And now he's like, man, I'm so sorry. And like everyone's like, yeah, it's okay. Come here. I mean, he's doing a good job with like the rest of the world is not as ready to forgive him and move on, right? Like the rest of Earth, like he can't stay on Earth because people are too edgy around him. Or on edge around him. They just can't.
not irrationally so.
Yeah, right, exactly. But yeah, you're right. Like the way that like, but I guess it kind of falls in line with the way that Mark has embraced him.
It does. The comic is, well, and that's the thing is like, you know, to your point about Thrag that we just talked about, if Kirkman, the next volume, wanted to pull back and be like, and have a third party be like, are you kidding me? This guy killed all these people and beat up his own son and said this about, you know what I mean? Like he could do that to us.
I think
in a way that I actually think would feel, then I would be like kind of insulted and be like, listen, I was trying to give you the benefit of the doubt and now you're calling me on that. Now you're just insulting me as a reader.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
like,
that's
which
totally
is it,
right. Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. Because he's put a lot of work into being like, no, like Nolan has changed and here's like, the actual actions he's taken to, like, he's fighting against the Viltrumites, he's arguing against wiping out the, you know, Earth people, whatever. Like, he's taking a lot of real steps. It's more than just kind of him being apologetic. The Debbie Nolan sex stuff is fine. Those jokes are, I even kind of like the callback to, like, Oliver now having to, you know, overhear his parents having sex.
You know, the joke I liked was Debbie's like, you got to find a way to lock these doors. You know, people keep walking in on us. And then he's like kind of talking through it, but then she starts talking about something else. She's like, no, I'm not even sexy. And he's like, very quietly, he's like, I guess I could fold the doors on top of it. Like he's so into her that he's like actually trying to figure out how to do this. I appreciated that. Yeah. That was good.
Mark and Eve, they move into his house, his parents, his mother's house.
Yeah.
And he's weirdly like child, like in kind of a childlike way, like wigged out. Being in the rooms where his parents have sex. I just have to say, like, I think Kirkman's... We have not had any praise for the way that he's talked about sex in this book. I think it's okay. I think some of it's okay now. Like, Eve even being like, come cheer me up, have sex with me. I'm like, that's kind of like a straightforward adult chit-chat way of talking about sex, where he's just been, like, weird and squeamish and, like, you know, oh, we better avert our eyes, young readers, like,
yeah,
that kind of tone before. And now he's just like, yeah, it's a couple that has sex, and they joke around about sex, and, you know, it's not like this, yeah, kind of a juvenile, like, you know, winking about it. It's a little more straightforward. It's
I
appreciated that.
I wonder, so, like, certainly, you know, a lot of time has passed, you know, as these issues are coming out, right? And creators are getting more mature and better at what they do. But also, I do wonder, like, is there sort of just an understanding of, like, oh, my audience for Invincible can come to the party for, you know, slightly more adult conversation and just acceptance of sex. Whereas, like, when he's writing this initially, it's kind of that, like, Stan Lee homage type narration, you know? And I it feels like that's just gone now from the book. And it does feel like a thing where it's kind of like, well, I don't have to play that game anymore. Mm-hmm. It was cutesy at the time, but that's not really what this book is or who this is for. And, like, to your point, it's like, it works better without it, certainly, you know? That's not really where this book is at right now, you know? It would be very annoying if it went back to it, I think.
Speaking of Mark's weird reactions, haven't mentioned his friend William from school, Bill.
Oh, yeah.
As we all know him, comes out as gay here. Like, he comes back and gay has come out.
Gay has taken him over.
Yeah.
The big gay.
It's the ultimate disrespect. Like, I'm not calling him William. I'm not even going to call him Bill. He's just gay now.
Just gay. It's just gay Bill.
William has, you know, like, he's dating a man. He's living with a man. And he's out. And he, like, has that conversation with Mark. It is, I don't know, like, there's a degree of Mark being, like, squeamish about a few things that I don't fully buy. It doesn't, like, totally gel for me with the Mark that they're trying to sell, who's, like, the mature hero trying to change the world, where he's just like, my girlfriend and my mom are friends? Yuck, I don't like this. Stop talking to each other. And they're like,
yeah, that's really weird.
Grow up. Like, you just got back from war. We were talked to each other a lot while you were gone. Like, you fought a war. What's your problem?
Like, I feel like part of that could be charming, quote unquote. I think just the like being weirded out by having sex in his parents' bedroom, like, that'd be fine. Like, it'd be like,
it's kind of fine.
Yeah, yes. He's been traumatized by war, but he's still a person. Like, it's kind of cute.
Yeah.
The thing of him being weirded out that his girlfriend and his mom are friends, and
that's weird.
What were we just talking about?
William.
And the William thing is like, oh no, you're being a weirdo. You're being a big weirdo, and leave those people alone, right?
I kind of get what, like, him responding to William and just being like, oh, great, fine, good, cool, goodbye me. Like, I'm cool, I'm good, like, with that, that's okay. Like, him overreacting because he's just so surprised by it. But he does also, he's like, yeah, well, all those times I changed in front of you, but that doesn't mean anything. You're attracted to every man, like, that's fine. Yeah, I think that's okay. And William being like, no, I was hot for you. Like, like, and Mark just being kind of wigged out, but still like, all right, cool, let's double date. All right, bye.
But like, not like wigged out, like, that's a problem. Not like angry.
No, just like, you know, surprised. Like, surprised on the back
foot. You just didn't know.
Yeah.
And like, he'll never take me flying again. Like, he's homophobic then. That's a paid throwaway.
Right, yeah. It doesn't salvage how cringy and bad those jokes are earlier in the run.
Yeah.
But you can feel Kirkman trying.
Yeah,
right?
Sure. It feels like a little bit of a mea culpa for those. Sure. I mean, not that, like, I don't know if William's going to be back or if this was just kind of a one-off scene for him to be kind of like, yeah, kind of trying to make up for that a little bit.
It's definitely a thing where
it's good.
The animation has a beat where it's just like, we're just going to start
early
here.
On.
We're not.
Yeah, sure.
We're not.
It is also a little bit more the time, like having, you know, 2003 was a pretty different time culturally in America. So having like an out gay character be the, like, the best pal of your superhero would have been like a pretty bold.
Invincible would have been winning GLAAD awards. You know, we just talked about this on my published year. But, you know,
no matter how homophobic it actually was, as long as it just had a gay character. So Dave, I think
I'm listening.
This is the first time, 5 episodes in, this is the first time I'm going to say that I'm, you know, I'm coming towards you a little bit.
Yeah.
I feel like the story of the first 4 episodes have been Dave, maybe not me convincing you, but the comic itself, just you reading it, you being like, all right, well, maybe it's,
I feel like it's been you convincing me to keep going. Dave, please.
Here's what I'm going to say. There's no world in which we finish this and I'm like, yep, it should be in the top 50 comics. Like,
right, you're very close-minded.
There's no way. It's just been too just fine for too long to have done that. Like, you can't have a comic that, like...
It could not end so spectacularly.
That the first 70 issues of it kind of being like, all right, like a C+ are enough to salvage that. Uh-huh. I know it's not. But I will say, if the comic was at this level of quality from the beginning, I could see that argument. if that is a soothing balm at all.
Yeah, and I will say, I think I'm around the same place. I don't think I'll ever agree that Invincible is one of the best comics of all time. I could see top 15 like superhero comics. If we're just talking superhero comics, changing the discussion to be specifically about that, yeah, it's probably one of the best superhero comics I've ever read. And it has the virtue of being just a superhero comic.
Maybe this is where I'm like, it's starting to contend. Because I think it's starting to do its own thing rather than, like, I just couldn't shake the feeling ever before this, really, where I was just like, well, like, it's okay, but I could just go read the Captain America run that does this thing better. I could just go read the Daredevil run that does this better. And I think, like, this is the first time where, like, no, like,
it gets harder to replace, right? It gets...
Yeah.
It could, because there's so much building on itself over such a long time, it does get genuinely harder to be like, well, there's not a Superman run that has this. There's not a Spider-Man run that has this. I think that's an interesting point. I will continue to maintain that the only way this is a top 100, and the only reason it was as high as it was, is if it's one of your earliest entries into superhero comics.
Sure.
And I'm fine with that, right? That's a very experience-based time and place.
Oh, yeah.
It's a very... And I'm not even saying age. I'm not even saying, you know, intellectual curiosity. I'm just saying, like, journeys into comics, right? Mm-hmm. Just, I'm fine with that. For me, it did have a significant, like... It felt like it was doing things way more uniquely because I hadn't read as many other superhero comics. So the ones that I had read, it was like, well, they wouldn't do that, you know? And, oh, they're not walking that back. And it's building on itself. And it's doing all the things that I kind of wish, you know, I saw from the characters that I think I love, like Spider-Man or Wolverine or whatever, right? Getting into comics.
You clearly haven't read the Mark Miller Wolverine because, you know.
Yeah, a real journey of growth.
It's a great
over a long period of time. But yeah, so I still love that about it, but this is the part of it for me once we get into that kind of Image Renaissance era where it's like, oh, and now I kind of just enjoy these as they are, forget the context, forget, you know, my own personal experience. Now I think it's just kind of like two creators who are very comfortable with each other putting out really fast-paced, like mildly complex action comics with good characters.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
And good ideas. We're going to run into some tough stuff as it continues, too. Like, it's not...
I've heard.
Yeah. It's not clear sailing. It's not like, oh, yeah, it got good, and it's just going to go from here. Like, there's going to be... You know, it has bumps, and that's kind of the journey of this book. But I do feel better about... There was a point when the Viltrumite War ends, and there is kind of that lull of kind of like a back to Earth and kind of just figuring out, you know, how thick can we make Eve and these sorts of questions that are really on all of our minds. Where I was like, I think maybe we should stop. I was like, I had maybe 2-3 issue moment where I was like, we might need to call this. Like, I think I lost. But it finds its way back and it doesn't do the thing where it really just like, it doesn't take a huge breath to recalibrate, you know? It keeps building, it keeps adding things. And then it surprised me again in the ways that it was like, oh, actually, we have a way more interesting role for Thrag in this than just unbeatable Viltrumite baddie, you know? And the Dinosaurus is the greatest character creation of the 2010s. So, like, some good stuff in there.
You know my rating on this one?
Well, before you do that, I'm just kind of debating in my head, like, how insane is it actually?
Stop reading it right now.
Could you actually jump ahead?
No, I don't want to. No, I mean, the listeners won't want to do that. I don't want to do that, for sure. Like...
Because like in a Marvel book, I'd be like, jump ahead.
Jump ahead to this. No.
No, I'd be like, read the first 13. Read Angstrom Levy.
Yeah. I mean, some of the...
Read, you know, as, the Multiverse War.
As
jump ahead.
As elegant as I think it was, I think, you know, you do kind of need some of that context. It does build on itself.
I think my opinion would be, I think it starts really, really strong, and then it's again really, really strong with Angstrom Levy, and I think there's a big dip in there, but even that dip isn't like, it wasn't a chore to read through, right, at any point. We're just like, yeah, it's okay. And then it's getting back to being like really, really good.
Maybe it's, you know what it is maybe, Charlotte, to that point is, yeah. I think it's a chore on a reread.
Maybe too, yeah.
If it's your first read, probably it's not a good idea. But if it's a reread, I felt the chore. I mean, we were joking about somebody in the Slack, patreon.com/memoirs here, was like, you know, my reaction to downloading the next Invincible Compendium is a big sigh. And I laughed at that, but I also felt that, you know? And I think that's, I think it's just the reread experience versus it's new and fresh.
Yeah.
Kind of feeling like, ah, oh, man, there's a lot of that. Because it is, you know, we talk about the pacing and the action and stuff, but like Kirkman is way overwriting still a lot of dialogue. There are pages I look at and I'm just like I Ralph right on the page. Like I've cleaned my tablet a lot just from the amount of bubbles, like thought bubbles and dialogue bubbles that I've seen. Maybe I should see a doctor. I don't know. Maybe that's not normal. But you know what I mean? Like it's still got that Bendis-y thing of like, you look at a page and it's like, oh my gosh, what? I'm not reading.
Yeah,
these
he
words.
Still does it sometimes. Yeah. It's not as often, but he just does it. The thing, Don't make me start complaining again, Dave.
I'm not anti-word. On record, in many ways. I love a good word.
I think sometimes when I see those like big info dumps where characters just talking like three or four big paragraph length bubbles at once, I'll really put myself in the mindset of like, okay, I'm going to read every word and I'm going to say, like, think to myself, like, did I need to know all this? Does this add anything that they just spent all this time explaining some detail?
Yeah.
It's so rarely... The answer is so rarely yes in this comic, where he just gets into some, like, it kind of just feels like wheel spinning so often. It's strange where, like, he just has someone talking about the state of the war for the Viltrumite War, but it's not full of interesting detail. It's not full, like, it's just kind of, it kind of feels like he's like, oh, I got to establish this stuff, but, like, do you? And do you have to do it at such length? Like, Anyway, I don't think you could skip. I mean, you know.
Not in the first read, true,
Yeah, no. If you've already read it, sure. You know, skip around to your favorite parts.
But I wouldn't even recommend it to someone by saying, oh, it's a tough read, but it gets good at, like, issue 70. I think it, like...
Yeah.
I think it's very good at the beginning. It's, like, it's very good at the beginning. It's gonna slow down, but it's gonna pick back up at some point. Like, you... It's worth it to get through it. And I don't think anyone is gonna start and be like... Yeah, I mean, if you don't like it at the beginning, then yeah, stop. But if you like it at the beginning and it dips down for you, yeah, it's gonna get better at some point.
Those first 13 issues, obviously, it changes in complexity and tone, and the creators they literally change from Walker to Otley. But it's like, if you're not feeling the world by the end of that, it's not your book. I don't think. I do think they're that crucial. You will know by then. And then from there, it's kind of your mileage may vary, I think, in a lot of ways. I'm happy about where it's at. I couldn't remember. Like, I didn't know when does dinosaurs come in the picture and when does all the Viltrumite stuff kick off? Like, I was happy to be hitting it here and be like, oh yeah. So I think from like 70 through the end is kind of where, you know, that would have been the stuff that was like, I was reading more or less live. You know, like in the moment as it came out, and was having a really good time with Invincible. So I'm finally caught up with that, and I'm kind of like, okay, like this reflects more of my confidence and enjoyment of the work, I think, than the stuff that was coming out before I was reading comics at all, you know? Which I think in a lot of ways, maybe part of the story here too, is they started making better comics once I started getting into comics. Like, I think I pushed them to do that. And I think maybe not a lot of people give me credit for that.
That's true.
Maybe we could start doing that. Yeah.
I mean, my Marvel's year, you know, has pushed Marvel in positive directions, right?
It has. It's actually
a good place right now.
The story of Marvel Unlimited is it has gotten better every year of its existence, more or less. But that's also, like, it has also gotten better as my Marvel's year has been coming out. So
it's true.
Tell me that's not related. Tell me that's not correlated.
I couldn't honestly tell you that.
Yeah, you could try. You'd be wrong. Okay, so Charlotte, in judgment of the two of us over the halfway point, where do we stand?
Ooh. Huh. I mean, if I'm talking about the opinions you have right now, I mean, I feel like we're all kind of on the same page right now, right? Like, forgetting the binary of, like, is it the greatest of all time or the worst of all time? I think we're all right now on
but
the stance
of... We all have
of,
the binary it, here on this podcast.
Yeah, we're all... So. We're all into
Love,
the binary
respect
right
the
here.
Binary. Mm-hmm.
I feel talking like about we're Carol all Danvers, kind of, like, of course.
Yeah, it's getting really, really good. Probably one of our favorite superhero comics, but not top 100 comics, bar none. So I guess that's leading more to... I don't know, who is it leading more to? It's like right at the midway point between worst of all time and best of all time. I guess it's more towards best because I like it. Yeah, I guess more to Dave's initial stance, if the stance is worst or best. But yeah.
All right, that's exactly what I wanted to hear. I'm
what
winning
I
at halftime.
First four episodes that we did, I gave 6.7, 7, 7.1, 7.
And in this like batch, you have this, okay. This is a
I
7?
Just put, it's on the spreadsheet. No, that was the last one.
Oh, okay, this, okay.
8.3.
8.3. That's a best new music on Pitchfork before they got gutted.
8.3 is a good. It's a good rating.
Yeah.
Good.
I will. I'm good with an 8.3. I'm happy with an
8.3. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. See, I feel like Invincible is a 7.4 as a whole.
Hmm.
And you know what's also a 7.4? Green Day's American Idiot, which in 2004, as I was getting into rock and roll, was like my favorite album ever. And this is the Green Day's American Idiot of superhero comics. It's the Taylor Swift of superhero comics, and it's also the Green Day's American Idiot of superhero comics. And now I finally understand how I feel about it.
If I average all my scores together, it's a 7.22. So, you know, we still got a little ways to go. I
mean, but that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
And to be clear, I never argued that Invincible wasn't like, it was a pretty good comic, even before we started this.
Yeah, you were never brave enough to take a real stance.
Yeah, that's a good point.
As an homage, the next issues of Invincible we read for the show, I'll read while listening to Green Day's American Idiots.
Please do. Please do. Charlotte, what are your Green Day opinions?
I like Green Day. I used to listen to it when I was a kid. I listened to American Idiots.
Are you
at some
fan?
Points on, like, on... in a row, like several times in a row when I was like 15, 16.
Yeah, it's a good 15, 16 album.
Yeah, for sure. I don't listen to Green Day that much anymore, but yeah, I still listen to it quite a bit. The one song that's often in my liked songs on these, on French Spotify.
What's French Spotify called?
It's called Deezer, and I once said Deezer, and Zach thought I was making a Deezer Nuts joke.
Yeah, Deezer Nuts.
No, it's just called Deezer. And the
I can't believe it's called that.
The one song from American Idiot I listened to a bunch is What's Her Name?
What's Her Name? Yeah.
Weirdly enough.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like Green Day.
I'll go back and listen to Dookie anytime.
Yeah, Dookie's the only one that I go listen to now. But
oh, I like Green Day a lot, but I would go listen to Dookie anytime. I would also play
just
it front
for
to back.
Charlotte to be like, oh yeah, I love Green Day. Unos, dos, tres.
Yeah. Why? Okay, so this episode was sponsored by Green Day.
I didn't get the joke.
They're just widely like more modern. 2012 now, and bad, considered like the low point of Green Day.
The ones I've listened to the most are American Idiot, as far as albums. American Idiot. I don't know the name of the album, but the one with 21st Century Breakdown.
That's the name of the album.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
And the one with the big green explosion on the cover.
That's Dookie.
Basket Case?
That's Dookie.
Oh, that's
yeah,
Dookie. Okay,
Dookie,
cool.
Which is, that's the classic one.
Okay. Well, so I have good taste. Great. Good to know.
Good job. Good job, Charlotte.
Thank you.
Zach, I would like you to start thinking about, yeah, good job, Charlotte. Thank you.
Not surprised you have good taste, just surprised that this is something you've listened to, just based on what I've heard of your
Green Day?
Listening.
Just classic rock punk? Yeah.
Yeah, I just, you know, it's not.
I didn't know if they'd been on TikTok enough to get you to. Albums.
I'm not on TikTok that much. Come on.
They don't do Undertale covers.
Zach, I would like you to think a little more deeply about...
Just period. Here's some
in general.
About a comic that you love. that I can attack over the course of 8 months.
Okay.
So if we do the inverse of this series, what would that be?
Impossible, though. My taste is impeccable when it comes to...
That's rich.
I mean, it's the ones that I kind of love beyond... I mean, Fables and Preacher.
Fables.
I love. Yeah, but like Fables is good. You would not have too much of a leg to stand on. Like I reread some of Fables recently.
Yeah, Zionism's pretty big right now.
It's never been. When Bigby Wolf talks about how cool and tough Israel is.
Oh boy, I don't know if we could dip our toes in those waters.
Yeah.
You know what I did? I'll recommend it right here. The Power of Dreams, or Power Born of Dreams. It's by a Palestinian author. Really, really great. I don't have it in front of me.
Mohammed Sabahane.
Yes. Yeah. Really, really good graphic novel. I recommend people check that out. Because I read Joe Sacco's Palestine, which is really great. Like, pretty incredible comics work. But then I was kind of feeling uncomfortable about, like, I'm not reading any actual, like, Palestinian cartoonists on the matter. So I found Power Born Dreams has been translated into English. And then the comics work of I've got it over here. It's like cartoons, but they're pretty incredible with these really good essays on kind of the struggle of Palestine Israel from that perspective. Let me grab it. 1 second. It's called A Child in Palestine, The Cartoons of Naji Al-Ali. I just finished that last night. That's another recommendation. We could compare those to Fables, I think, if you want to do that.
Yeah, I think that's good. Yeah, I think that's the fair reading of Fables is stack up against this. What about Chew? I love Chew, and you're...
Oh, I like Chew. Chew's pretty high on my list, isn't it? I mean, probably top 30, so...
Oh, okay. All right.
I wouldn't want to fight you. Maybe I'll look at your
best comics of all time, and then, like, let me go down to the bottom.
I guess we could do the full run of Alpha Flight.
Oh, my God.
I wouldn't even defend it that much. Like,
what would make us quit podcasting faster?
Wow, you have some... Whoa, what the hell's happening here in your top 500, Dave? Down at the bottom, you have Something's Killing the Children, like 489?
Weird about that?
Near the bottom of your list?
It's not the bottom. That's in the top 500. The bottom is 1,020.
Sure.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. Well, I don't have access to the,
Well, if you support me on patreon.com/comiccarol, you could.
Yeah, I don't give you. I used to.
used to.
That guy's really fallen off. I guess maybe I'll give you $1 so I can see that list.
Do you love Something is Killing the Children?
No, I was just surprised. I thought this was in your, like, it stinks range.
Oh, no. No.
Yeah.
Don't be ridiculous.
I like Uzumaki's very low. I do love Uzumaki.
I wouldn't fight too hard on that.
Okay. Yeah, I know. Yeah, we'll have to find. I'll look. You send me that list for free, and then I'll take a look at it.
I think a lot of my least favorite comics of all time are things that we've read together. Or we're supposed to, in the case of Marvel.
Okay.
I'm kind
of... And I'm never going to be, like, the biggest... I don't know. There's very few, like, big two comics where I'd be like, this is one of the best I've ever read. Like, it's going to have to be outside of
big two. So. Charlotte, do you have a comic that you love that you think both of us would, like, despise?
I'm currently trying to go through my mind of all, like, my mind palace of comics.
Asterix and what's his face?
Oh, Asterix would be interesting to be like, oh, are we along for the ride with you?
I was hearing Hysterix and I was like, what's Hysterix?
I would have said Asterix, but then I just copied Zach.
Well, Dave does whenever I disagree with him.
Go into Hysterix.
Yeah, we could do Asterix. I don't know how well Asterix translates into... It is very French jokes and puns.
Yeah, it might not be as fun just to be like, I don't get it. It's too French. Like, as a critique.
I think I would love to go do the whole the read through of Once and Future and have Zach hate the grandma.
Oh, I love Once and Future.
What are you
ralphing at? What did you read any of it?
He hates the grandma.
Yeah, I read like three or four issues of that.
Oh, you really gave it a shot.
This stinks.
Maybe it's a Gillen defense, Charlotte. Maybe it's you and I defending Gillen against this monster.
It's gonna happen. That's gonna be a showdown because I'm.
It's for sure gonna happen.
If Gillen is glib, I do not. I'm trying to think of a rhyme.
If Gillen is glib, you will not fib about your emotions.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Yeah. He's got a glib tone that I do not gel with.
Do you love the Books of Magic by Neil Gaiman?
I haven't read it. I think I read the little initial like mini at the beginning, but that's it.
Yeah.
Gillen being serious, I can get into. Die, pretty good.
Yeah.
There's no real jokes in that one.
It's gonna get heated. I'm a little worried because we haven't really had cause to get Charlotte super.
Oh yeah, I know. I'm excited.
Heated to, yet? You know.
Attack her faves.
Yeah.
It's definitely coming.
Yeah. I'm. Yeah. We'll see.
Already getting mad. Appreciate it.
I already don't hide my opinions, and I like mock like Young Avengers stuff to her, and she's very calm and collected about it. I'm extremely rude, so
that means she's just
be able to get a rise out of her.
Building anger, just boiling.
If you truly do hate Karen Gillan stuff, I will be surprised. I think there's some stuff you're gonna dislike. I think maybe some of the earlier stuff. I'd be very surprised if you don't like the like low-key Young Avengers stuff as a whole. But we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Once in Future is probably my least favorite thing I've read of his, but
and it's even just like, because of the grandma.
It's just that grammar. grammar. I hate that grammar. The grammar of it.
There was a French YouTuber that was around in the 2010s who did like movie reviews. And he did a review of Guardians of the Galaxy, the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie, mm-hmm. where he was just, yeah, the movie's fine, but like, why is there a raccoon here? That doesn't make sense. Why is there a raccoon among the main characters? And like his whole thing was like, it's part of the Marvel Universe. It's part of like, it's trying to, like, it was a time where the MCU had more stance of like, oh, we're trying to make this realistic and make it make sense in the context of the real world. And like, and now we just have a raccoon? That doesn't make sense. And that was his whole review. Zach's stance on Once in Future is very similar to that.
The guy gets shot by his own grandma, and she was just like, you need to be taught a lesson. Like, mind your manners.
This is the worst truly, review. You know what? I know what would be the equivalent for me. If I made Zach read the entirety of the Percy Jackson universe.
Oh,
books,
that'd be good.
Oh, yeah.
He would die.
That would be good.
Freaking hate that. Yeah.
To defend myself a little, I think I read Once in Future, like the first few issues in 2019. So I don't know how strongly I stand by that. I'd have to really sit with it.
Zach, will you choose Percy or cry for mercy? That's what I want to know.
Yeah.
That's good.
All right. Let's take it home.
Bring it on home.
Let's land this bad boy.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. This has been Convincible Part 5. There are 3 parts remaining. I think we're gonna do it. Like, I think we're going to finish.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
It's been real touch and go. But if you're reading along with us, thanks for doing so. You can support us over at patreon.com/MyMarvelousYear. You can review us via MyMarvelousYear on iTunes. I'm Dave. That's Zach. That's Charlotte. I'm winning. Thanks for listening, everybody. And we will convince you next year.
I'll convince you next year.
Damn,
that's good.
Yeah.
Damn, that's good.